guys, welcome to Vaudeville. It's our 4-year anniversary. Woo! Vaudeville is 4. And today we have an amazing guest. I'm here with
Gabby.
Yay! And Gabby, what are we talking about today?
The midterm elections for 2022.
Yes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. So Gabby, about that red wave.
I heard recently in some news that I was watching where it turned more into a pink trickle is what they said.
I think I described it as like, because I think last time when they were like blue wave, I was like, oh, it's more like a toilet swirl. This is more like, you know, as a woman, it feels like, you know, when you expect heavy period and just like see spotting, and it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's how it is. It's literally just spotting.
Yeah. No, like that's what I thought too when I heard that analogy.
Yeah. That is the best way to describe it. It wasn't any wave or tsunami. It was interesting that they described it as going to be a red tsunami, and we're just like chilling here and like we're still waiting for the tsunami to arrive. But we're going to talk about, quite interestingly, swing states, because it seems like swing states were obviously pivotal this midterm. Swing states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia. And yeah, and some states that have slowly turned to swing states, even though like they're red right now, they've slowly turned to swing states. Like something like North Carolina is a weird state, because like I saw the numbers and I was like, that is very close, and this is coming from North Carolina, which is obviously in the south. So we're talking about swing states. We're going to start with your state, the great state of
Pennsylvania.
Oh my god, you guys came through. Like I was screaming on my telly.
It's definitely interesting being here because PA has always kind of been solidified as a swing state.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like the Senate race was like sort of the biggest thing, which was Fetterman versus Oz, I believe. Yeah. And it was like, it was everywhere. Every single day we were getting some piece of election news in the mail.
Did you guys expect Fetterman to win? Because, like, I don't know. Because I only know Dr. Oz from telly. And when he said he was running, I was like, is he okay? Is this, like, I mean, this is not the first time a reality person, like, ran, right? I mean, we went through a whole 4 years with no reality TV star.
Yeah. Yeah. And that same one supported Oz, which is why he was nominated for the Republicans like candidacy. And it's kind of like the big thing though is there was so much tension of who was gonna win.
Mm-hmm.
And I always hoped for like Fetterman to win, but I was still like kind of iffy to see how it was gonna go. But it's ended up being that he did win, even though a lot of people apparently were saying that Oz was going to. So a bright spot.
And it's a huge gain because your former senator was
Pat Toomey,
who is Republican. Mm-hmm. And now that seat has been turned to Democrat, which is quite interesting. Because Pennsylvania, yes, has always solidified itself as the swing state. It's here or there, depending on the president. I think in Obama's time, Pennsylvania voted for Obama, but Trump's time, they voted for Trump. And in Biden's time, Pennsylvania voted for Biden. Which was very close too, because like all these races are very too close, and it's kind of scary because you're like, oh yay, and they're like, oh yay.
No, I feel that because when PA swung red during 2016, like I just remember like being so upset and just remembering the moment it happened because I obviously was not a Trump supporter. And it was just like, my state is a swing state. It's so pivotal. And it swung in a way I didn't want. So I'm very optimistic now that it did swing blue for the Senate seat. Because Pat Toomey has been like a pretty household name for a while. So it's kind of like interesting that this has happened. But a lot of what I read is that it's just discontent with Oz as a candidate. Especially, like, did you hear about, like, how everyone points out that he's from New Jersey?
Yes, yes, yes. He's not actually from the PA state. Not at all. But I'm wondering why he ran in PA if he's not from PA. That's interesting. Like, what was the reason behind it? Is there, like, because PA is a swing state, he thought he was likely win? Because, like, New Jersey, obviously, is a blue stronghold. So,
mm-hmm.
now, like, if he ran as a Republican, that's, like, that was never going to slide for the New Jersey citizens. So, I'm like, is that the reason why? Because it's, I don't know.
He never gave, like, open details about why, but it probably is because, like, Pennsylvania is more of a swing area versus, like, New Jersey tends to be very, like, hold fast blue, especially for their senators. And the thing is that it's not even that he went to school, like, back when he was in, like, his medical years in Pennsylvania, but that was years ago, and he didn't move back to Pennsylvania until 2020. And he's living at his in-laws' place. He's not, like, actually in his own house, from what I heard. His like, actual full mansion residence, which they always point out, is in, like, Cliffside, New Jersey.
That is ridiculous. I think the same thing happened for, like, the New York mayor race or something like that, where they found out the New York mayor was from New Jersey. What's wrong with New Jersey people looking to win races?
It's going out.
Outside of New Jersey. But now I'm, like, looking at the map, and, like, it seems to be a huge political difference between East Pennsylvania and West, because there are only two places in the West that like, you know, voted blue, which is around Erie, Pennsylvania, and Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Every other one was red. So I don't know, what's the cultural difference in those two sites?
It's what basically happens is that, as, like, which is kind of common throughout the country, urban or metropolitan areas tend to be more liberal or blue-leaning, and that's why you see that Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Erie are like that, because obviously Philadelphia is, like, the biggest city in the state. It has a lot of, like, population. It's more modern, diverse, similar to Pittsburgh. Like, they're very much just kind of smaller and a bit more, like, forest and in the hill sort of thing. Erie is, I believe, similar as well. I don't have as much interaction there. Versus everywhere in between, it's more rural, small town, not as diverse. So they often tend to be a lot more red-leaning or conservative.
Yeah. That's how they say, land doesn't vote, people do. That was the whole argument. Because, like, when you look at the map of the United States in terms of, like, voting, they seem to be a lot of reds. And that's because, like, you know, smaller areas, like towns with 5 people will probably vote conservative than, like, a city with, like, 9 million people. And that was, like, the whole issue with Illinois. Because every other place in Illinois hates Chicago. Because Chicago just seems to be the only city that's literally carrying the whole of Illinois. But then again, factor in that Illinois is, like, 12 million. And Chicago itself is 9 million by itself, like, Chicago land area. So they carry the whole thing, because, like, if, like, those amount of people vote, then the rest doesn't really matter, even, like, the capital, because the capital is also very red, which is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they said, like, you know, people do, not lands, which makes much more sense. And low-key, it's kind of, like, making me think about the abolishing of the Electoral College, because the Electoral College doesn't factor in that people vote than, you know, lands, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think we might have touched on this in 2020 last time we talked, but yeah, definitely the Electoral College is a very contentious tool or system, because a lot of people nowadays don't feel that it actually serves to the best interest of the people, because, like, by numbers, one candidate will win over the other. But then you have the Electoral College, and it's like, well, they don't win the majority, yet they win the presidency. And it's kind of, people say it's meant to be a checks and balance, to be like, give smaller areas as equal power. But realistically, if every single vote mattered, then candidates would have to campaign to every single area, because, like, a few thousand votes could change a difference.
Yeah.
That's my perspective.
I agree with that perspective, to be honest, because, like, when I heard the whole idea of the Electoral College, I was kind of confused, because, like, someone was like, why does a place like Wyoming have a stronger like, political vote than a place like California, which has millions of people? Not even saying bringing racial into it, but it is bringing racial into it, because, like, bigger cities mean more diverse.
Mm-hmm.
rural areas means very predominantly white, so it's kind of giving more power to, you know, white people in terms of voting. And I don't know, I do agree in terms of abolishing it, but then who am I to agree with it when I'm, like, still considered an immigrant? So it's like, oh, do I really have a voice in this type of thing or opinions?
I think in that sense, that's why, like, people care so much, is because sometimes they don't have the ability to be active participants in our political system. Like, people who are immigrants or don't have full status, like, the laws that are enacted by the Senate, the legislature, and even by local government impact their lives just as much, whether or not, like, they have that, like, citizen stamp on them. And that's the reality. So it definitely, this sort of system and how the racial makeup of the country is, does give more power to people who are white or non-POC. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, it blends itself into a larger conversation of, like, systematic racism and things like redlining and electoral or, like, voter suppression.
So thinking about Pennsylvania, because we're still in Pennsylvania, we're going to move a little bit right now. Thinking about Pennsylvania, now that it has voted twice for a Democrat, do you think that it will move away from being a swing state to be more Democratic? Or this is just how Pennsylvania does things, and this is just... It's going to probably change in a few years. Because, like, right now, apparently in Pennsylvania, the House is dominated by Democrats, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see the statistics. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 out of 17. That means they have the majority. The Democrats...
The House and the Senate. Like, the Pennsylvania House, right?
Yeah, Pennsylvania House.
Okay.
That's like the U.S. House, but Pennsylvania representative.
I honestly believe PA will be a swing state, because there's also just a lot of moderates, and there's a lot of suburban areas, and that's always the challenge, is who can swing, particularly, like, the white suburban vote, and it changes quite often. Like, no matter how much, like, progress or, like, liberal-leaning some people are, like, PA just tends to go with what it wants or who shows up for voting. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see. Like, I hope personally that it stays blue, but I can definitely see there being a backlash, because as the idea of, like, the midterms happens, like, it's always the idea that the president in power, his party loses power because there's discontent with how he's doing. Mm. And so I think that in the future there might be more discontent, like, as more Democrats are in power, people might be unhappy with things, stuff occurs, maybe out of their control or within it, and then they think, oh, it's time to switch. And then that's how people flip to become red or to become blue, either way.
That does make sense. I also think that it seemed like during this election, Biden wasn't on the ballot. It seems like what was on the ballot was the January 6th abortion inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Biden wasn't even considered. And I think also Trump. Biden wasn't even considered, I think, because, like, people put aside, like, a lot of angry people who were not for Biden did not voted blue still because of, they realized the candidate was an election denier, and they were like, I'm not going to vote for that crazy. Rather, I vote for the person who is blue. And also considering, like, you know, because I remember, like, before the dismantling of Roe v. Wade, they were in polls, it was showing that it's going to definitely be a red wave. Because a lot of people were like, oh, the inflation is too much. Everything is expensive. But then Roe v. Wade cancellation happened, and then, like, people were like, actually younger people, because younger people came out more this time than ever before, because people say Roe v. Wade, because, like, literally Gen Z grew up with Roe v. Wade being defended by the Constitution, and all of a sudden to wake up one day and be like, oh, it's no longer something. I think that was, like, an awakening for some people. Still, there weren't enough young people going out to vote, but it seems like a lot of Gen Zs were like, I think it's time for my voice to be heard. Because, like, the whole nature of it is that Gen Zs tend to be, like, less likely to vote because they're like, my vote doesn't matter, my vote won't change anything. I hate both candidates. Every single time is I hate both candidates. But this time it just seems like they voted because of, you know, Roe v. Wade, and they were like, wait a minute, I think my vote might matter if I voted for, you know, this person, or if this person owned the house. Well, like, what's your take on that? Like,
I definitely agree with that statement. I remember watching some segments where, like, yeah, Biden wasn't on the ballot. Some Democrats didn't even really want Biden to kind of campaign for them because, obviously, like, some moderates and conservatives have, like, such a bad opinion of him. They wanted to make it more about the issues and their platforms. So the big things that were on the ballot were inflation, abortion, and what happened January 6th. And even though the conservative party in the past, especially to my sort of perspective, tends to lean pretty extreme, a lot of those moderates and, like, other conservatives after January 6th were like, we can't, like, they tolerated a lot of things, but I guess that, like, a storming of the Capitol was just something they can't tolerate. So people who supported that or were election deniers really turned a lot of, enough conservatives off that they actually voted for the other side. And then obviously you have abortion rights, which is huge. And they thought, like, some Republicans thought, oh, it's not going to be as big of a thing as, like, crime and inflation, but it really was. And it shows the kind of importance that Americans put on that issue. So it's kind of, it's an interesting takeaway. Also, weird side point, but the January 6th, like, riots, I was there in D.C. when that happened.
Really?
So it was like, I had just started, I had moved in like a day before into an apartment in D.C. because I was interning. And that apartment is at the top of H Street. So it's like a 10-minute walk to the Capitol, like a 10, 15-minute walk.
That's crazy. That's...
Yeah. Yeah, I was there that day. Like, my roommates and I were seeing it happen on the TV, and then we thought, this is insane. Should we go to see what's happening? And then, like, we got an alert saying shots fired, and we were like, yeah, we shouldn't go out.
Oh, my God.
So, like, I was there in the city when that happened, and I saw the aftermath.
That is, wow. I didn't know that. I knew you interned in D.C., but I didn't know, like, the timeline. I did a lot of internships in D.C., moving on a little bit, like, talking about election deniers, it seems like there were a lot of election deniers in Arizona. Like, Kerry Lake, who is a very well-known election denier, and Blake Masters, or something like that. So I don't know how elections happen, because I know Kelly McKelly, I don't know if it was a special
McKelly.
Yes. It was a special election in 2020, because I was like, wait a minute, didn't this guy just run 2020? They say we Warnock, because I'm like, wait a minute, I thought it was 6 years. What's happening? Well, it seemed like it was a special election in which, like, someone stepped down or someone died or something like that, and so they had to hold a seat. Because I was kind of confused why they had to run again, and it must be very stressful to always campaign in this part of, like, 2 years. You haven't even, like, sat down enough on the seat. But I'm glad Mark Kelly won his seat, because Mark Kelly... is an interesting, you know, person. His wife, I remember she was a House of Representative, and she got shot.
Gabby Gifford.
Yeah, Gabby Gifford. And they have the Gifford Foundation, which stands against gun violence. So I was like, this is quite interesting for Arizona. But now, like, the whole... Because there was this whole thing where, like, for example, the same with Georgia, the governor was getting way more in terms of Republican, but then the Senate... It seems like people voting more Democrat. So, like, there's just two piles of, like, people who are like, oh, well, I want to keep my governor. I want to keep this governor. Because Kerry Lake was this close to winning. Like, very close. Like, ridiculously close. But Mark Kelly was already, like, speeding away from Masters. So, I don't understand the dichotomy. Which, like, someone wants to be like, oh, you know what? Having a Republican governor doesn't seem as bad. But, like, Senate? No. Like, what is, like, that top process?
I think it's, again, kind of back to that idea of quality of candidates and their character. Like, people do, to be quite honest, people often look at how they feel when they look at a candidate and their characterizations and how they hold themselves. And I think the fact that that senator and, like, or the senator nominee for Arizona was an election denier, more than likely it was very Trump-leaning, may potentially supported the like insurrection, like those are all things that turn voters off. But if the senator, if the governor elect didn't really sway that, like swing that way, or didn't make that a focal point of his like campaign rallies and his conversations, then he'll seem like a more kind of stable, traditional conservative candidate versus like these often now extreme candidates. So I think if people are able to see that, then they will change their votes on the ballot. They'll be like, I'll vote blue for this and red for this.
Yeah, I think an example of that is Nevada, where they voted for Lombardo, who they switched because Nevada used to have a Democratic governor and now has a Republican governor. But in terms of like the Senate, Cortez was this close to losing, but she made it through and she is a Democratic senator. The same thing happened with Sununu, who is in New Hampshire. Well, he's an interesting governor because I feel like New England is weird when it comes to like their governor race, because I know Massachusetts always had like a sense of a Republican governor for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have a Senate. All their Senate is predominantly blue. Because there are those people who believe, oh, fiscally conservative, socially progressive ideology. Mm-hmm. The same happened with New Hampshire, which is like, live free or die is literally their motto, and they're very serious about it. So they have someone like Sununu, who is like their governor. But then the center for New Hampshire is Hassan, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So there are this whole dichotomy happening constantly, because it happened in Georgia, which Georgia, we don't know who is winning yet. But mm-hmm. Brian Kemp really took the race and ran with it.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate in my opinion, but...
Yeah, we'll go into deeper demographics later, because I have so much to say about the demographics, because it's, like, pissing me off. But Brian Kemp won Georgia. But then mm-hmm. the senator is, like, still a runoff, with, like, Warnock was leading for a long time. The same mm-hmm. thing happened in Nevada. The same thing happened in New Hampshire. So there's this weird dichotomy. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Wisconsin was the other way around, because the Wisconsin governor is a Democrat and the Wisconsin senator is a Republican. So it's like this whole thing, like some states are like, you know what, let's take checks and balances to a new level. Let's have one of one party and the other of one party. As long as one is not an election denier, I think they're fine
mm-hmm.
with that. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of people are fine with that ideology of, oh, fiscally conservative and socially progressive, which low-key doesn't make sense to me, because the whole idea of like fiscally conservative, it's you don't get lesser taxes under the Republican Party unless you're a corporation.
Yeah.
Which I'm just like, that does not work like that.
Yeah, it trickle down economics, which trickles down to nothing. I don't really agree with, from my personal standpoint, fiscally conservative and like socially like democratic or liberal, I can't really follow that, because our fiscal decisions have an impact on our society and our social outlooks. So I can't really always separate one or the other, because that's a whole nother conversation about race and financials and the equity and distribution of resources here.
And Massachusetts, which is interesting, because Massachusetts is very blue. It's a well-known blue state, but they tend to have mm-hmm. a very, like, non-Republican government. They tend to have blue Republican governors, which is kind of a weird liberal Republican governors. I mean, Mitt Romney was once their governor, which considering he's one of the people who is able to stand against a lot of the crazies, or, you know, he's considered more or less, they call him Rhino, Republican in name only, or the new term that they form for people who do not go to the extreme. So they call them rhinos. And so he has been called the rhino many times. He doesn't care, because the man is living his best life and getting money as he sits down and becomes the senator for Utah. But he was governor of Massachusetts, and Massachusetts had like a red governor until like recently, which they voted their first Democratic governor in like a few years. Because now Massachusetts is totally blue, and I don't know what changes that, because like I said, like Maryland too does that, where their governor tends to be red and then their senator tends to be blue, and it's a well-known blue state. So I still don't understand that dichotomy in which, like, some people want, oh, we want the governor to be this way, but then want the senator to be this way. We are very liberal in our state, but we will like a governor who's, like, conservative. Like, it's still an interesting process in my head.
Yeah, honestly, you're opening my eyes to this, too. I kind of don't always see that as much, but it does kind of make sense because Tom Wolf, a governor who is, like, stepping down, he's very blue, and then he always had to be fighting with the Pennsylvania, like, legislature because it was, like, very red, and it was, like, one wants one thing, one wants another. It's not really working sometimes. So, I don't know. The Northeast is, like, can be kind of interesting in how they think.
It seems like that because...
it can be very socially liberal. I mean, even historically, that's what they claim. Mm-hmm. But then there's, like, so many underlying, like, conservative attitudes and just, like, groups, like, that very much more conservative-leaning than you'd imagine.
I mean, wasn't Boston voted as the most racist city to live in, like, a while back? It wasn't, like...
I would not be surprised by that.
3 to 4 years ago.
And England is very white. Very white, lots of time, old money.
Oh, okay. And I guess they want to keep their old money. I guess that's why they tend to vote that way, because they know a certain party won't keep their money.
Yeah.
So now, going into the demographics, because this pissed me off, and this is even going with Texas, because Texas, we were close. We were close 4 years ago. We got further this time, and I don't understand why, because after all the bad decisions by Gregory, we thought people would come out and vote for Beto, and now it's even wider, because it's over 10%. I think it's like 11%. Which was weird, because, like, when Beto ran against Ted Cruz, it was, like, 3%, like, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't understand. My brain is not computing. It seems Texas have gone way more red. And it seems like the Republican Party is slowly getting the Hispanic vote, the Latino vote. And I don't understand this change. I guess because... It's the same party that is not very good with immigration. It's the same party that has voted against the interest. Uvalde, that had a school shooting, voted predominantly red. And it's a predominantly Hispanic town, Hispanic city. And I think I'm just frustrated because I just like people. I know Texas is a state where people vote against their interest. So we're used to that term. But it seems like a lot of, like, the Rio Grande Valley, like, decided, you know what, let's do things quite different. I don't know if it's due to more people coming through the border, or I don't know. I'm kind of confused with that.
I think with that, first I'm gonna just address, like, the whole Beto thing. Like, I think one part of that is more people hated Ted Cruz than they hate Greg Abbott. And hate is a great motivator to get people out to vote. And I also think, I think that his failed presidential run was not a good look for him. I was really, like, when people were, like, talking about that, whispering about that, I was like, I really hope he doesn't run. Because I know that, like, he wasn't going to win. It was going to be, like, more detrimental. And now he's lost, like, a third major race. He lost senator, he lost president, and he's lost governor now. So, I think despite the fact that he raised a lot of money, he really spoke to a younger generation, he just was not able to garner the support of, like, older, more middle ground, I would say, like, conservatives. And then also the fact that it is, like younger people, like, even though he appeals to younger people aren't as high turnout voters. Yeah. So I think it's that. And then the general loss in the Latino vote, the Republicans have been gunning for that in the last few years. They've been saying we're going to have the Latino majority, which has historically been, like, more Democratic. And I think a part of that, from what I've been hearing, is just that Latinos do not equal immigration. A lot of people who are not Latino will correlate the two. So even though, like, from the outside, like, we say, like, oh my god, like, they're saying this about immigration, da 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 da. For Latinos, they want to be seen, and this is from things I've read, I cannot speak for the actual Latino experience, past immigration. And a big thing is, like, things like abortion, businesses, lots, obviously, Hispanic Latino population is huge in Texas. A lot of them are small business owners. And you could even factor in, like, their religious values. A lot of them are very Catholic or Christian, and abortion was something on the ticket. So I think that's, like, all those things that can, like, factor into it. And, like, generally, the Democrats are losing the Latino vote, which will not be helpful come 2024.
Yeah, it's. I looked at the statistics and I was like, mm-hmm. first and foremost, they're losing a lot of white women.
They are doing that too, yeah.
Like, I'm just like, excuse me. Like, I'm sorry, but white men seem to be the loudest when it comes to abortion discussion. But when it comes to voting, it's like, where are they? Like, where were they? The statistics were bad. It's like, the only people who were concrete were Asian votes and black votes. Like, black vote was never moving. It was like, I saw in, like, Georgia was like 95% black women. I was like, yes, those are the queens right there.
In Georgia, Stacey Abrams won generally, like, the black men and women's vote. And where she really lost was, like, a little bit in the Latino vote, but also very much in the white men.
Mm-hmm. White men and white women. Because
yeah, just, white, like, men and women.
I saw, like, 39% or 30-some percent. I was like, white women? I'm confused. Like I said, they are the ones who are the loudest when it comes to, like, things like abortion. And when it comes to actually voting, like, what happens? Because, you know, we are factoring things like suburban women, because, like, those are the things that, like, seem to affect suburban women and city women. Because, like, if you factor in rural women, they are not as populated as, like, suburban women, or their vote is very stagnant. They know who they want to vote, and that's it. But suburban women go with the wind. It depends on who the candidate is. I remember that's the reason why Virginia lost their governorship to a Republican, because they kept saying, cuckoo race theory, are coming to your children's school, they're coming into the schools, better save your children. So the suburban women were like, oh my god, my kids. And then they voted Republican. This time, I don't know what factor or what was appealing to vote for the Republican Party, in the sense for suburban women, specifically suburban women. I don't know.
My only thoughts on what could have motivated them to swing more right is maybe inflation, because a lot of times, like, women are in charge of, like, the financial household and things like that. So potentially inflation. Maybe also, at least where I live, there's this huge worry about crime. Crime is statistically up, and a lot of people are worried that it will bleed into the suburbs. And the fact that people say bleed into the suburbs is, like, its own issue. But I think it's, like, if people appeal to that sense of fear, the fear that, oh my god, the cities are out of control, there's violence coming in, that, and then, like, suburban white women live in the suburbs right outside the city, like, that might influence their vote to be a little more red, because they think, oh, Republicans will be harder on crime.
Which statistically is not true, because in states, like, if you look at the states with highest per capita murders, something like St. Louis, Missouri is, like, number one for some reason. When people think of it, they're like, oh, Baltimore, Chicago. And then you look at St. Louis, Missouri, you're like, excuse me, like, no one is saying anything about Missouri. And Missouri is just, like, holding the crown of number one for a long time. They even, like, we looked at Illinois itself. There's a place called Rockford, which is more, like, northwest. Has more crimes per capita than Chicago. It's red. And it's like, it's more, it's like, you know, because it's more, like, smaller, it has, per capita is higher. But no one says anything about Rockford. They're like, oh, Chicago, you hear bullets everywhere, Chicago, you this in Chicago. Like, literally, I remember, like, when I was in Chicago, someone told me that the air is toxic in Chicago because of the amount of gunpowder in the air. I was like, what the heck? Like, that's exaggeration right there. The same thing, like, when people stereotype places like Detroit. But then you look deeper and you like realize that there are more places that have more crimes per capita than that is being said. Like Alaska has one of the highest per capita rates because like Alaska is huge. And Alaska, like, to get, like, when people die and people don't even know where they were, like, what happened, or it's less likely to be solved. But no one is talking about Alaska, rather, they're talking about all these other places. So it's kind of like, at the end of the day, when you look at the statistics, it's not actually true. The same crime thing, yes, crimes are going to increase in cities. Like, it's a city. What did you expect? It's like, you know, but
more densely populated.
Yeah, densely populated. But like when they say, oh, it will bleed into the suburbs, statistically, that is not right in terms of like those kind of things. And yes, crime was higher after the pandemic came because everyone came outside and was like, wait a minute, we're outside, we're free now, you know, let's do stupid things. But at the end of the day, it's I don't know. Like, it's, you would think that something like Roe v. Wade, like the way Roe v. Wade is the catalyst for Gen Z voting, would be the catalyst for white women voting, but it just doesn't seem that way, at all. And I don't know. They're losing the white women vote. They're losing the Latino vote, and they need to figure out what to do. Because here's the issue. Now there's this whole thing about balance. Because now they've gotten the young vote, or young people are actually voting more. They don't want to let that go because that literally will save them this election. But then how do you appeal to this other vote you're losing? Because if you're like, okay, we're going to lean more into abortion, which means that they're going to like get more younger people to vote, but then the Latino votes are reducing because of that. Where is the balance in which they can get, like, all this time that the Latino votes have been like majority in terms of like getting the Democrats to win, like getting all these votes, who are you willing to lose? Are you willing to lose white suburban women? Are you willing to lose a Latino vote and getting more younger people to vote? It's kind of like a weird... And then, you know, politics is not as easy as just like A equal to B, because like people just think, you know, oh yes, this is good and this evil, this is that, this good. But you actually need people to win.
It has not been swinging lately, and that's a concern, is that it's going to become like a solid red state. And yeah, we'll see where that goes. I definitely think in terms of who they focus on will be challenging, because it depends like who will come out to the polls. That's the reality of things. Though maybe some people in like the Democratic Party are much more like Gen Z, younger generation leaning, more liberal. If they don't show up, then they lose at the polls. Because white women and Latinos will show up at the polls. And so there's that to have as a consideration. And I don't know, like, the thing about the Democratic Party is that they lack a central message and structure. And that's always been their problem, especially in recent years. Because, like, as bad as it was, all the Republicans centered around Trump when he was getting elected. Like, they thought he was, like, a joke at first, and then they centered around him, and then they continued to center themselves around him throughout his presidency, despite the times they should have said something. And they continue to do that. Half the party continues to, even if it's to their detriment. So, the Democrats need to work on creating some sort of central point in a way to kind of build a party together. Because conservatives are more likely to, like, vote within party. They're, like, pretty loyal. Versus a lot of Democrats, I feel like nowadays, especially young ones, are willing to look at people and vote independent, or look at it and say, I'm not happy with a candidate, and then not vote.
I do agree. But the issue is party ideology. The same way, like, conservatives, you say they rally around each other, the same way they did for Alabama when Tom Moore, was it Roy Moore, whatever that guy's name is, came out and they're like, oh, he's a pedophile, all those kind of things. They still rallied around the dude. The same thing, like, something like Al Franken now, I always use that as an example. Like, the groping incident came out and Democrats were like, dude, you have to leave. Is that same, like, because Democrats have always centered themselves as like, oh, we are the good party. You know, technically, they're really not, more like in some senses, but they have this image they have to keep. And in that image, there are people who are very, very left that cannot be moved toward the center. But there's like an overwhelming amount of moderate Democrats, because a lot of people are scared of moving too left because of like, they're like, oh, that's like, you're playing socialism. You know, like, people don't understand that concept yet. So like, people are like, oh yeah, I'm going to stand with socialism, you really aren't talking to majority of the American voters, which I know there are like so many good things that come off from it, but people don't know that yet. You need to draw people in before you can tell them, hey, this is what my ideology is, you know. You need like a magnet to draw them in before you go deeper into it. You can't just go straight like way left. Like obviously, yes, the Republican Party went way right, but you could see that people are now moderate because the people who were very far right did not win. You can see America is a very central, centrist country. So to get those votes, you need to work around that. But the thing that the Democratic Party don't do that. You see people like, they call them the squad or whatever they call them in the house. They're like, oh, I'm not going to vote for something that Nancy Pelosi brought into the table. Nancy Pelosi is known as a more centrist,
centrist
Democrat. So it's kind of like, but you could see that recently in this election, there are more moderate Democrats who won their seats, who kept their seats. So how do you play around that moderate Democrat thing? Because, like, Biden is considered a moderate Democrat, but then until, like, the Republicans weren't doing shit with what he was saying, he became, you know, they call him Dark Brandon and also, like, just, he's doing his own thing right now. So, like, how do you get those people to understand they have to rally around the party? But the thing is that the Democrats, like I said, Democrats have always had this ideology that they're a good party, so I have to stand with my ideologies. I'm not going to change because of politics. That's just how they are. Compared to like the Republican Party, maybe there may be only two Republican Party members who probably like vote outside of the party if they need to. Like, look at what they did to Liz Cheney. She voted that woman out from her seat because of like, and she's like strong. She, we even call her like a moderate Republican. She's like a little bit more right, but not crazy right. But like, even at that, they still like, they will be like, oh, you're going against this one person that we rallied against, so we're going to vote you out from your seat. And they did. And it's kind of like, how do you get the Democratic Party to do that altogether, but also maintain their styles as the good, quote-unquote, good party? It's a hard, it's like a pulley chess game that everyone is playing and just figuring things out. But like, I don't really know how they can do that. That's the issue now. That's, if they could get that right, they could really go and like win shit, even in like places like Florida. But I don't really know how they would do that.
I think part of it is just about like messaging and like having the two sides, like you said, come together at some point, because there is such a cut of like a lot of older people, like people like 30-ish and above, are very much more moderate Democrats. They don't really vibe with the really liberal ones, versus younger people are much more liberal, as they tend to be, and don't vibe with like centrists, because they feel like they're sellouts. They feel like they're not actually like liberals, and that they're only it in name. And it doesn't help that a lot of them are like old white men and women. So I don't know, there's just such a divide in the party, and like a scrambling of different messages all around. And then like, so the message of like AOC is being translated to a Democratic candidate in Arizona. Like, some people see that because of how prolific the media is in social media, even though like realistically that's not the same platform that Democrat is going to run on, because it's a completely different area. So I don't know, that's something they need to work on. Another thing they need to work on is just like giving more concrete changes, because another thing that Democrats seem to have, people seem to have this perception of Democrats, is that they say a lot, they don't do a lot. And they think that Republicans do a lot, which I don't really know if that's accurate, but they need to start putting in like hardcore plans, able to pull things like data and like be on the boots and grounds to kind of show people, especially moderates or like middle conservatives, that they are able to get stuff done. They're not just talking.
I do believe, because like my mom, for example, she is Democrat in like how she believes and her thoughts, but she also feels like Democrats don't do shit. They're all like promise, and they don't do things. Because like, there are big things that Democratic Party have promised, like immigration is one of them, that they'll fix the immigration system. They haven't done anything about it, it seems. Like, I don't know what they've done. Like, obviously, it's not Like, I tell my mom, like, Biden's not like Trump. Biden doesn't go about saying, and I did this, and I did that, and
yeah.
I was done. And he does things very silently, so no one really knows what the heck he has been doing for the past, yeah. like, 2 years. Unless it's something as big as, like, student loans.
Student loan plan.
That's like, but like, he's not that someone who's very boastful about what he does. He's just very quiet about it. But like, there were some promises that were made. Like, that's where like a lot of immigrants, like, because I'm more or less in the immigrant community, and they were like, oh, well, he was going to have that immigrant plan, actually, like undocumented immigrant, DACA, and like TPS. They were going to have a pathway citizenship that was promised in his election time. Even though they did not vote, they had a lot of their family members voting just for that reason. And now nothing has been done because like, they bring that plan to the house, and the house, a lot of people in the house are like, actually moderate Democrats are like, and then they're like, I might lose my seat because of this, you know, everyone's considering like losing their seat or gaining a seat. The Senate is not even considering it at that time, because like I said, they are still very moderate people, and it seems very progressive to some other people. I consider myself more of a progressive than moderate anything, because like, I'm very left-leaning in my sense, but I look at like the politics of the United States and I realize my ideology is not the main ideology yet. So I don't go about saying, oh yes, this must happen and that must happen, this must happen and that must happen, because I'm just like, that will not happen. You have to look at this statistically. So I did believe that they were going to do something, because they had the whole plan. It was written in the campaign form. There were like many sheets of it. I read about it, and it was kind of sad to see that in the span of 2 years nothing has still happened. And low-key, like, courts have kind of cancelled DACA, and like, new people come into DACA, and like, it has really affected the immigrant community. So I can't really judge a president by the first 2 years. Low-key, you can, but just saying. But that's something like, a lot of people are like, at least the Republican Party, when they say shit, they do shit. Like, for example, Trump was like, you know what, I'm going to just give more tax cuts to the corporate people, and no one blinked an eye because he did it.
Yeah.
I'm going to build the wall. He did build part of the wall. I mean, there was some stuff on the way. So that's why people think that the Republican Party is a party of like actions than talking, because they don't like, they give promises that are very, you know, anti, that they're very racist and they're very anti-immigration, and yet they stick to it. That's the issue. Now, the Democratic Party is like, hey, we're the good party. We're going to tell you now that we're going to give you childcare. We're going to work on childcare. We're going to work on all these things. And yet, we're just like, where are all these promises? You know, it's this kind of things that like factor into like what people vote for.
He's very quiet. He's always been more of a background guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think another thing about the Republican Party is they get things, they can get things done, or it seems they get things done, but particularly in states in which they have power. And when Trump was president, he was doing executive orders left and right, like no other president had done before, because obviously it's like, it can be considered an abuse of power if you use it too much. And then also he had the power of the House, and for a little bit, I think the Senate, like he had like, the Republicans were the majority, so it was much easier to push his agendas through and to actually get those tax cuts done, to get, like, immigration done, because he just kind of signed off on it, and it happened. And so I think sometimes you have to consider that as well, because sometimes Republicans try to push things, and it's Democrats try to push things, but they just don't have the support. Like, Obama tried... took him all of 8 years to get Medicare, Medicare. Like, it took him 8 years to do that. And people are like, when's it happening? When's it happening? I was like, well, it took so long because there was so much to do and so much pushback from Republicans. That's why it's called Obamacare. They asked him to call it that. That way, if people were unhappy with it, it was associated with his name.
Yeah. It's very ridiculous, to be honest. It's just like, at the end of the day, because that's kind of something that scares me with this new centrist system we currently have, because like, even though like, it's like the country was like, oh yeah, we want to go full Republican in the House, but not really too Republican, so now the House is just like partially Republican, and then the Senate is not fully, because like, we have people like Manchin and Sinema, so what the fuck, the lady from Arizona, Sinema, yeah, those two God bless your soul, but they are very annoying to work with. They go with the money.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, the centerness of America, like, it's also just propagated or upheld by the fact that we have a two-party system. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for independents to get elected. We don't, it's a really all or nothing thing. That's why people vote on party lines.
Yeah.
Also, to your viewers, it's actually the Affordable Care Act. I double-checked it because I was like, Medicare did not sound right. Affordable Care Act is what people call Obamacare. But continue.
Yeah, it is the Affordable Care Act, but they call it, yes, yeah, Obamacare. That's correct, ACA. What is your, to the viewers, what is, like, your hope? Like, most of my viewers are Gen Zs. And I think low-key, by telling them that the country is mostly moderate, I think we've kind of, like, shortened the amount of people who are going to vote regardless. But kind of, like, give them a pep in their step to go to the polls coming 2024. Because they really made a big factor. And I hope that the politicians are able to use this opportunity, because they might not use opportunity anymore. So kind of give them a pep talk to see, like, you know, how, like, to give them a pep in their step for 2024, get them ready for 2024.
2024, you don't want to swing. That's what I'm telling you now. If you are, as you're clear from my answers, you can tell I'm much more Democratic leaning. If you don't want to swing red, you need to get out to the polls, because you can be unhappy with some of the Democrats we have, but you need to support them as much as possible so that there is a pathway for the future. It's not just this election, it's the election down the road. It's the people we put in power and the power we're able to give the party to push agendas like codifying Roe versus Wade, trying to, like, improve things for the LGBTQ community and, like, passing those sort of laws. Like, it depends on not just the president, but our ability to elect local government, to elect senators, representatives, who will make those votes. And if you just say, I don't like anyone, you're wasting a vote, because older generations know that, hey, maybe I'm not the very vote at the end, but I am a vote. And they come out, and that's why they help decide elections. So if young voters want a pathway to change and reform, they need to try and bolster the general party and just, like, understand that it's about thinking years down the road. Mm-hmm. So, like, look at your legislature, find out who you can support, and also just, like, sometimes people think it doesn't matter and it's, like, hard to vote and things like that. And it's, like, it matters. Like, we've seen in these last few years how much a vote matters. So check it out. Maybe in your state, I voted early. I did a mail-in ballot. So I sent in my ballot, like, 4 or 5 weeks before the election even happened. And then I got an email saying it was confirmed. So, like, look to see if you can do early voting in person or through mail. Look to see if your company gives you off on those election days, and, like, go out and find ways to be a part of the process.
So with great power comes great responsibility.
Responsibilities.
Yes. Once you clock 18, you've got great power. So here is the responsibility that comes with it. So, yes, thank you so much, Gabby, for coming. It was really amazing talking with you. It's been a while. And, yeah, Have a great week, and let's get back to business now that the election has finished. See you guys later. Bye.